50 years ago, the Batei Medrash of every yeshiva, shuls worldwide, were packed with Jews who were crying and saying Tehillim for what was about to be the Second Holocaust. Every Arab nation was amassed along the border. And the stated goal was to drive every Jew in Israel into the sea and to eradicate the state of Israel. In fact, there were Gedolim that felt that the entire notion of moving all of Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael was dangerous for that very reason. If you bring everyone to Eretz Yisrael, if you concentrate all of world Jewry in one place, then the opportunity for our destruction is clear. President of Israel at the time got on the radio, the Prime Minister got on the radio and gave perhaps the worst speech of his entire life. He was shaking, he was nervous, and he communicated to the world that Israel's leadership was weak. This emboldened the Arab nations. And in a preemptive strike, Israel wiped out the most powerful air force in the region of that time. They flew to Egypt, where all the planes were grounded, and they wiped out the entire Egyptian air force in one morning. In a matter of moments, the entire war shifted. All of a sudden, there were opportunities that we never had before. For example, the opportunity to reunite Yerushalayim with its other half. And it culminated with the Israeli soldiers coming through Har HaBayit, and actually the Israeli soldiers conquered Har HaBayit. What today is the Dome of the Rock, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, was in control by the Israeli army. In fact, they flew the Israeli flag over the mosque. Moshe Dayan saw that flag and told them to take it down because he said, this is World War III. If you take over Islam's holiest site, it will be World War III, take it down. A very complex move. Many say that it was a big mistake. Famous picture of the three soldiers at the Kotel. The shofar blowing. Reporting on the radio, Har HaBayit Biadenu, Har HaBayit Biadenu. If you haven't seen the clip, of the Israeli soldiers running through the old city, going to the Kotel, if you haven't heard the Har HaBayit Biadenu and the shofar, take a couple minutes of your life to listen to it. It is one of the most powerful things you will ever hear. I wasn't alive then, obviously. But I heard from my parents, I heard from my mother-in-law, that it was the most exciting time of their entire life. Going from basically believing that all of Israeli Jewry was going to be destroyed to Har HaBayit Biadenu was such a swing of miraculous proportions that they didn't know what to do with themselves. There was mass aliyah. Tons of people came to visit. I know of a couple that today lives in the old city. At the time, they were not observant. They were Jewish, but not observant. And after the Six-Day War, they said, it is impossible for us to live in America. This is clearly where God wants us to be. They came, and they bought an apartment in the old city. At the time, it was very cheap. Now it's a multi-million dollar apartment. Simply because, and then they were Chozer B'tshuva, but simply because it was so obvious to them that God was doing something miraculous. We today walk through the city streets of Yerushalayim as if it's nothing. right here in Tomer Devorah. We are an impediment to peace. Right? Ramat Ashkol, that's the line. Mishmar HaGvul, Gvul, that's the line. Right? Occupied territory. The return to Yerushalayim is something that our generation, and I include myself in this, we don't get it. We are missing it, and it is tragic that we're missing it. Because there is something so fundamental about yearning for something for thousands of years, and then when you finally get it, it becomes hergel to you, it becomes normative, it's just everyday life. How could that be? I read a story, I don't remember which Rebbe it was, but a particular Hasidic Rebbe that lived in Poland, that whenever anybody would come from Eretz Yisrael and they would bring a bottle of wine, before they would uncork the wine, he would gather around all of his children and all of his Hasidim, and they would take turns, as soon as they opened it, smelling from the bottle of wine, because when they corked the bottle of wine, air from Eretz Yisrael was trapped in it. And they yearned for Eretz Yisrael so powerfully, so palpably, that to open up the cork and to have the opportunity to smell a little bit of the air of Eretz Yisrael, how could you give up such an opportunity? And we come to Eretz Yisrael like it's Disney World. This is the truth of our generation. To go to the Kotel is like going to Cinderella's castle. To go to Kever Rachel is like going to the teacups. To go to Maras HaMachpelah, it's a small world. We're doing our little Florida dance, our little vacation, where we come to Eretz Yisrael, which is beautiful on the one hand, and it's awesome that it's become so normative for us, but on the other hand, we've lost something. Tonight I'd like to, in our last shiur of this year, I'd like to try to capture what we must take away from Yom Yerushalayim, how this must impact our life moving forward. Im eshkachech Yerushalayim tishkach yemini. If I forget Yerushalayim, let me forget my right hand. There's an obvious question. This pasuk, Im eshkachech Yerushalayim tishkach yemini, it's seminal for us, right? This is one of the key psukim. You get married under the chuppah, right? After you are mikudeshas to your husband, somebody's going to sing beautifully. We hope it's beautiful. Don't get one of your brother-in-laws who doesn't really know how to sing to croak it out, yeah? Im eshkachech Yerushalayim tishkach yemini. It's going to be unbelievably powerful. Your chasson's going to stamp on the glass to remind ourselves of zecher l'churban, what we don't have. And of course, immediately everybody says mazel tov, yeah? Which is always somewhat incongruous. Why does it say im eshkachech? What does it mean im eshkachech? Why doesn't it say remember Yerushalayim? Why does it say don't forget? If I forget Yerushalayim, let me forget my right hand. What does that mean? And why my right hand? So those are the two questions. Number one, what's the pshat that it says don't forget? Don't forget is passive. It should say remember. Remember. And secondly, what does it mean, let me forget my right hand? What does it mean, why not let me forget my heart? What is the right hand? And another question, and this might seem like kfira. Why is Yerushalayim so important? Why is Yerushalayim so important? Why do we yearn so much for Yerushalayim? Let it say, Emeshkachech Beis HaMikdash, Emeshkachech Kodesh HaKadoshim, Emeshkachech Yerushalayim. What does Yerushalayim represent that we can't forget it? It's Gemara at the end of Makos. You've all heard of this Gemara before. The Gemara tells the story, several Tanoim that saw the Makam HaMikdash, and they saw a fox coming out from the rubble, and they began to cry. Rav Akiva began to laugh. They asked Rav Akiva, "Why are you laughing?" He turned to them and he said, "Why are you crying?" He said, "Why are we crying? The Beis HaMikdash, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the place where the Kohen Gadol could only go on the holiest day of the year, the holiest man at the holiest moment of the year, and now even a fox can come out of it. How could we not cry? Why are you laughing?" Rav Akiva says, "Because now that one of the Nevuahs has been fulfilled, now the other one can be fulfilled. The first Nevuah told of the destruction of the Mikdash. Now that the destruction of the Mikdash has been fulfilled, now we will be zocher to see the rebuilding of the Mikdash." But there's another question. You don't laugh at a funeral. You don't laugh at a funeral. Imagine for a moment. Imagine for a moment that there's a big tzaddik who believes in Tchiyas HaMeisim. He believes in Tchiyas HaMeisim. So he goes to a funeral. Would the tzaddik say, "It's appropriate for me to laugh at the funeral because I know that Tchiyas HaMeisim is going to come and it's going to be rebuilt"? How could Rav Akiva be laughing at the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash? Now that he's seen one Nevuah come true, so now he'll see another one come true. But still, how many thousands of years will it be until Rav Akiva sees that Nevuah come true? And another question. When the Beis HaMikdash was being destroyed, we know in the Kodesh HaKadoshim there were Kruvim. What were the Kruvim? They were... what was that? Yeah, cherubs in English. We know that when Klal Yisrael was misbehaving, they turned away from each other, representing our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We know that when we were in a good place, they were facing each other. Gemara tells us that in the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, they were in loving embrace. And they took the Kruvim out of the Beis HaMikdash and they said, look at Klal Yisrael's idolatry. You think they're so frum, you think they're above idolatry. They're into idolatry. In the holiest place in the world, they have idols. And they went around telling the whole world this. They went around with the Kruvim. Two questions. Number one, what is the pshat that the Kruvim were in loving embrace? This is the moment of the destruction of the Mikdash. If anything, they should have been in opposite ends of the room. A couple gets into a fight, they turn away from each other. This was the ultimate fight between us and the Ribbono Shel Olam. They turned away from each other. No. Here we find them in loving embrace. And another question. What is the pshat? Why isn't it idolatrous? It looks idolatrous, no? At first glance, when you look at the concept of the Kruvim, how could we have graven images in the Kodesh HaKadosh? How could you have such a thing? So I want to share with you a story. How many questions? It's a lot of questions already, right? Two questions. So what are we up to? You're always in charge of writing down all my questions. How many questions? Six, seven? Oh, six. It's an easy one. Last year we had 12, right? Today we'll leave it at six. I want to share with you a mashal that I heard B'shem Rav Shlomo Kalbach many years ago. In this mashal, I think it's everything. I think it encapsulates on some level every emotion that a Jew feels when it comes to Eretz Yisrael. The truth is that Shlomo Kalbach himself said that he found this story, I think in some book of Roman poetry or something like that. But it's an unbelievable mashal. He tells the following story. The story is of a husband and wife who lived in Rome. They loved each other very much. But you know, girls, couples who love each other very much, they sometimes fight. It's not because they don't love each other. It's because marriage is like one of these blatot. That's what marriage is. The whole space of marriage is one of these blatot. So what's naturally going to happen when you have two people living in one tile, one blata like that? Naturally, you're going to rub up against each other. Shalom bias issues. Sometimes when a couple keeps bumping into each other over and over and over again, sometimes the fight starts to escalate. It's not because they don't love each other. It's because they're so sick of bumping into each other. They don't understand how it could be that they keep bumping into each other with all the love that they have for each other. And in one particularly terrible fight that this couple was having, the wife threw out a suggestion. She goes, maybe I should leave. Maybe I should go back to my parents. Let's take a break. Let's get separated for a little bit. Let's get some space. Let's get some distance. We can regroup. The husband says, you're right. That's a good idea. That's a good idea. I always wanted to travel. You're not so into traveling. I always wanted to travel. I'm going to take this opportunity to travel while you're going back to your parents. And so she goes to her parents. And the next week she gets a postcard from her husband. You know what postcards are? Today you have to ask that question. It's like I was once giving a shiur and I was telling somebody about a battery that died. And the kid couldn't understand what I was talking about. He's like, what does that mean? You just like recharge it. It's like, no, batteries, they die also. Didn't have such a concept. Try explaining film to people today, yeah? So she gets a postcard. It's from Germany. She says, hey, just wanted to check in. Wanted to let you know that I'm here in Germany doing my travels. I have to tell you, I met the most amazing woman here in Germany. I was at a bar, and we just had the greatest time together. And when she's reading this, her heart breaks. It's not what she wanted. It's not where her head was at. She wanted to get some distance. She wanted to get some separation to regroup. All of a sudden, he's telling her about other women. She's so confused. She doesn't know what's going on. The next week, she gets another postcard. This one's from Russia. Tells her he's seeing Moscow. He saw the Kremlin. He saw the KGB. I don't know, whatever there is to see. That's really all I know about Russia, right? He saw Siberia. I don't know whatever he saw, yeah? And he tells her that he met the most amazing woman. And they went touring together. She doesn't, what's going on over here? The next week she gets a postcard from Switzerland. The Alps. You have to see the Alps. I went skiing on the Alps with this amazing woman. In every postcard that she's getting, he's telling her about another woman that he met. Finally, she makes the dreaded mistake. She tells her parents what's going on. I can tell by that groan that you all know exactly what that means. And she says to her mother, she says, you know, we just needed some space from each other, but he keeps meeting other women. And you know what the mother does. I told you he was no good for you. He never was good enough for you. I can't believe you stayed married to him for so long. You have to leave. What's going on over here? But this woman, she's so confused, she doesn't know what to do. And now she's getting it over the head from her parents. You got to leave him, he's a bum. So now she's got to get some space from her parents. I'm sure you can appreciate that, right? So she decides to go back to her apartment in Rome. She travels back to her apartment. She goes to put the key in the door, but the door swings open. Just a slight push and the door swings open. It was unlocked. Why is the door unlocked? She tiptoes into the house. She doesn't know if she's being robbed. And she hears noises. She hears noises in the house. There's an intruder in the house. She picks up a baseball bat, starts to walk around the house, and she sees the light in her husband's study is on. And she tiptoes over, and she peers around the corner. And who does she see? She sees her husband. She doesn't make any sense because she just got a postcard from him that he was in London. And on the desk, she sees that there's a pile of postcards. She walks into the room. Her husband looks up surprised. He says, "What are you doing here?" She goes, "What are you doing here?" He says, "I'll tell you the truth. I never left. I could not bear to leave." She said, "But I was getting these postcards from you." He said, "You know, I love you so much. I felt like you just needed some space from me. But I didn't want you to feel like I was sitting here pining after you the entire time, because then maybe you wouldn't get the space that you needed. So I told you I was leaving also, but how could I leave? This is our home. This is where I want to raise a family with you. This is where I want our grandchildren to play on our lap. So how could I possibly leave? So I sent you those postcards so that you should feel that you have the capability of getting the space that you need. But of course, I never left." Says Rav Shlomo Carlebach, this is the story of our galus. It appears on the outside as if the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, as if such a thing could possibly be true. The Beis HaMikdash is not built of bricks and mortar. The outside of the Beis HaMikdash, and a Jew needs to learn how to see. That's what it means, v'sechezena einenu b'shuv chotziyam b'rachamim. We have to return our eyes. Because what our eyes see is a kotel. What our eyes see is a big golden mosque standing in the Makam HaMikdash. That's what our eyes see right now, but that's the galus. V'sechezena einenu. We have to learn how to see that the Ribbono Shel Olam never left that place. Not even for a minute. What does it mean that the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed? It means that there's the proverbial distance in the relationship. It means that the Shechinta's Begalusa right now, which means that we have trouble seeing the Ribbono Shel Olam. But is it possible that the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed? No, the Ribbono Shel Olam is sitting in the Makam HaMikdash right now. And the way that he's behaving towards us is he's just waiting for us to walk in the door and to notice that he's been there the entire time, so that we could then turn around and say to him, "I thought you left." And the Ribbono Shel Olam will smile at us in Yemei Mashiach, and he'll go, "As if that's possible. As if it's possible for me to leave the heart of a Jew. As if it's possible for our relationship to be destroyed. There could never be a Churban." And then we'll realize that the entire time, even though it looked like on the outside, maybe the Ribbono Shel Olam favors the Christians. There's 2 billion Christians in the world, so maybe he favors them. After all, what are we, just a couple of million? Maybe he favors the Muslims. Look, we made a wrong turn when we came out of Mitzrayim, no? We came out of Mitzrayim, we made a left. If we would have made a right, we would have ended up in Saudi Arabia. We'd have a lot of oil. Would be pretty geschmack. Would be pretty good. You see how they dress over there in Saudi Arabia? All those Saudi princes with their sword dance that they did with Trump? Yeah? Imagine doing that with a bunch of Jews? That'd be awesome. Made the wrong turn. We ended up here in Eretz Yisrael. So maybe on the outside it looks like the Ribbono Shel Olam favors the Christians. Maybe on the outside it looks like he favors the Muslims. But it's postcards. It's just postcards. It just looks that way because it's part of what the Ribbono Shel Olam thought we needed in order to gain a little bit of perspective on our relationship with him. That's what Galus is really all about. And with this in mind, let's start to journey back through some of our questions. Why are there kruvim in the Makam HaMikdash? Why do they turn away from each other? Why do they turn towards each other? And why in the time of the Churban were they in loving embrace? In general, in a relationship, there's two attitudes. There's an attitude of "I'm facing you," and there's an attitude of "I'm not facing you." What does that look like practically? There are times in a relationship between a husband and a wife, between parents and children, where the relationship is on the rocks. Things are not going so well. I'm sure some of you may have experienced this once or twice in your life, where you feel frustrated. How come my parents don't understand me? How come my husband doesn't understand me? How come my wife doesn't understand me? And the relationship becomes embattled and embroiled. And there's a stance of retreat, a pullback. A teenager might slam the door to her room and lock the door. And then the father comes, "You don't lock the door in my house, right?" And I'll huff and I'll puff until, yeah? I know those smiles, by the way. I can tell exactly which one of you right now go, "Yep." And I can tell some of you not. But okay, but a lot of you, yes, yeah? There are times in a spouse's relationship where there's a retreat. I just need some space. I can't be with you right now. It's so difficult. It's so painful. It's so frustrating. And so sometimes the kruvim face away from each other. And other times the kruvim are Baruch Hashem facing towards each other. It means that the relationship is in a state of revelation. It means that right now we've revealed what essentially always was. And that's exciting, to look at each other. I'll tell you the story of my Rebbe. I think I may have shared this story with you once, but it bears repeating. I one time sat in my Rebbe's Shalita's house. His apartment in Borough Park. It was me, my Rebbe, and his Rebbetzin. My Rebbe and his Rebbetzin at the time, I want to say they were in their early 80s. And they have a refrigerator. We were sitting in the kitchen, they have a refrigerator. And on the refrigerator is pictures of my Rebbe's family. My Rebbe Kanai Nahara had a big family, and every one of his kids had a big family. And now those kids are having big families. You know, at some point, it's like you have grandchildren every single day. Yeah? So I commented to my Rebbe and to his wife. I said, "Looks more like a tribe than a family." There was a chasna, and they had every single person in the family there. So it was one of those wide lens cameras from about 50 feet back. So my Rebbe said something, he said something frum, like Baruch Hashem or something like that. And then his Rebbetzin looked at him, and she said, "And all from a couple of kids who had no idea what they were doing." And then they shared a look. And that look could not have been more than a moment, but in my head it was forever, because it was so uncomfortable. Because this was my Rebbe, who's a gadol b'Yisrael, one of the greatest lomdim of the generation, the person that I revered, that I spent 8 years learning with. And I saw a romantic moment. And it was so uncomfortable. But in that look, said more than any amount of words that a person could have said for their entire life. You could speak from the moment you're born till the moment you die, and it would not have contained the depth of emotion that was in that one look. It's like when children who don't really know what love is, like when you meet a 16-year-old. This is like one of my favorite things in the summer. I work with high school kids in the summer, and 16-year-old comes over to me and he's talking to me about his girlfriend. He goes, "I love her." I'm like, "You are 16, man. You don't even have the foggiest notion of what that is." And then they get very offended. "How could you say that?" "Because I'm twice your age and I've had a little bit more of life. I know a little bit what I'm talking about. You're dating a girl and that's great and that's exciting, but that is not begin to describe what love is, because the fact that you can even use the word love doesn't even make any sense." That's what we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, that only the man could say, "Hareyat mikudeshes li." The woman would never be able to say that because she understands that the depth of a relationship is so far beyond words. In that look, it was so beyond words. That's called the kruvim facing each other. As they just looked at each other. And it was so powerful because it was what the Shekhinah's been desiring this entire time. But there is a third stance. Mizritcher Magid says that the third stance is before you go on a journey. There's a halacha. Halacha is that before a man goes on a journey, there's a halacha that he and his wife should be in a stance of loving embrace. What's the pshat? The pshat is that before someone goes away, it's not enough just to look at them. You have to become one with them. That's what intimacy means.
I don't mean physical intimacy. I mean real intimacy. Intimacy means oneness. Before we leave each other, where on the outside it's going to look like we're totally separated, we're not in the same room, maybe we're not in the same country. But the message you have to take with you when you're leaving, when you're 6,000, 10,000, 15,000 miles away, is you have to know that our relationship is bigger than space. That our relationship is deeper than something physical. Because if our relationship is just physical, then something is terribly lacking. This answers a fundamental question. How can Klal Yisrael survive the Churban HaBayis when we're mefuzer amongst all the nations of the world, we're spread out, and we've lost tribes, and we don't have our sovereign home? How can we remain Klal Yisrael? The identity of a Jew has nothing to do with physical. The physical is the manifestation of a much deeper reality, which is the essential oneness that we share with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So before a spouse leaves, you have to make sure that you understand that intimacy has nothing to do with the physical world. That's a very powerful statement. And when the nations of the world took the Kruvim out, so to speak, and they hold up the Kruvim and they say, look, Klal Yisrael is idolatrous, it's because they misunderstand the very essence of the Kruvim. And let me explain. We are a pornographic generation. And I don't mean pornographic the way you think I'm saying pornographic. I mean we're pornographic for real. Pornographic means that you're looking at the external of something and that's where you remain. You don't get to the essence of it. And we live in a generation where all people see is the external. All people care about is physical beauty. They're not getting to the deeper essence. They don't know how to express themselves in a way that reveals their essence. That's the whole goal. The deepest essence that I have should only be shared with somebody that I love. And so I should protect that essence and only reveal it in the right moments, in the right time, to the right people. But we live in a generation where everyone's just focused on the outside. The house that you have, the car that you have, the husband that you have, the personality of your children. Do they behave in school? Do they not behave in school? Do I have as much as the Schwartzes? But it's lacking depth, it lacks character, it lacks essence. That's what Avodah Zarah is. Avodah Zarah is when you take something godly and you make it physical. And you make it small and pathetic. It's a god of wood, it's a god of stone. And when a person does that, they can do horrible things. When a person takes God and they put God into a piece of wood, and they put God into a stone, that allows them, that gives them license to do whatever they want. Because I'm in control of God. Because look, it's God is shetchi. He's on the outside. It's not something on the inside. That gives a person license to do whatever they want. That's the danger of idolatry. So when the Goyim saw that in the Kodesh HaKadoshim we had Kruvim, they said, ah, Klal Yisrael is just like us. Because when you got to the deepest essence of a Jew, when you got to his Kodesh HaKadoshim, what did you see? You saw Kruvim, physical. And they missed it. They didn't understand that for us, the Kruvim were not physical. Yes, they had a physical countenance. They had a physical appearance. But for us, it was a manifestation of the deepest essence of our relationship with Hashem. Are we turned away? Are we turned towards? Or are we in loving embrace? So they fundamentally misunderstood the Kruvim. They're parading around in the streets going, ah, Klal Yisrael is a bunch of idol worshippers. But they didn't understand it was the expression of the greatest essence of what it means to be a Jew. And this is why, says the Mezritch Magid, that before we went on our journey into Gullus, it was critical that the Kruvim tell us the message that Shlomo Kabach told us from that Mashal, which is while on the outside we appear to be in two separate places, on the inside the relationship has never been more whole. And that brings me to the message that I want to share with you tonight. The one word that you must take away from tonight, that you must take with you for the rest of your life, and the word is hope. Hope is not optimism. Optimism is a stance. I'm optimistic.
I'm optimistic that it's going to work out well. I'm not a pessimistic person. I don't see the world in a negative way. Hope is much deeper than optimism. Hope is the natural state of a person's soul yearning to be reconnected to its source. That's where hope comes from. Hope is like when you came this year, in the beginning of the year, to Tomer Devorah. You weren't optimistic, I hope. You weren't optimistic that it was going to be a good year. You were hopeful. Because there was a part of you that knew the moment you walked into this seminary, there was a part of you that deeply hoped, that was already intrinsically connected to the truth, and said, I really hope that someone will help me actualize that this year. It's much bigger than optimism. It's much deeper than optimism. So the message that the Kruvim gave us when they were in their state of loving embrace is there is every reason to be hopeful. There's every reason to be hopeful. Don't look on the outside and say, but we're so distant. Intrinsically, you will always be connected to Beis HaMikdash, to Yerushalayim, to Eretz Yisrael. It's what drove that Hasidish Rebbe to pop open the cork and to smell the air of Eretz Yisrael. And this is what it means, im eshkachech. For a Jew, you do not need to remember Yerushalayim. You don't need to remember Yerushalayim. That's like saying you have to remember your mother. And you get on the plane, your mother comes to the airport with you, and she says, remember me? How could I forget you? Im eshkachech. To say zecher means that you need a positive action to constantly remind yourself. When we say zecher, it means it's something outside of yourself. Like when we say zecher l'mechias Amalek. We have to remember that we have an obligation to destroy Amalek. You know why? Because Amalek is so foreign to a Jew. We have to remember that's something we have to destroy. For us, when we look at Amalek, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. So I have to remember, destroy Amalek, because it's something separate. When it comes to Yerushalayim, we're hopeful. It's deeply connected to us. So it says, Im eshkachech Yerushalayim, teshkach yamini. What is the yamin? The yamin is hope. Yamin is chesed. Hope and chesed go together. Chesed means that I'm not doing something for you because of what I get in return. Chesed doesn't mean, as I hope you've learned this year, some giant act of chesed. You know, like, you're only a balas chesed if you were, you know, running some incredible organization. That's not what chesed is. Chesed is in every single moment that you see someone, you feel so deeply connected to their essence that it's not shayach for you not to help them out. It comes from the same place as hope. It's the intrinsic connection. So im eshkachech Yerushalayim, tishkach yamini. If I've lost Yerushalayim, if I've somehow forgotten Yerushalayim, it's because I'm not conscious, I'm not focused of the intrinsic connection that could never die, that always exists between me and Yerushalayim. And Yerushalayim comes from a lashon of shalim, Yerushalayim. The ultimate awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The shlemus. And that's why it says Yerushalayim and not Beis HaMikdash. Because obviously Beis HaMikdash is the ultimate. But Yerushalayim refers to the shlemus that exists between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right now we're in a state of wholeness. Ah, you'll tell me, Rebbe, if we're in a state of wholeness, why are we in a state of galus? Galus is the state where we've forgotten the shlemus. Galus is the state where it's difficult for me to recognize the value of the relationship. And that's why under a chuppah, in that moment, when we're achieving shlemus with another, we say, Im eshkachech Yerushalayim tishkach yamini. Because when you marry someone, there's a feeling of familiarity that you have with them. When you meet them, you know something deeply. I don't know how I know it, because I only met you a very short time ago. But there's something about this relationship that's so much deeper than words, that's so much bigger than that. It's why sometimes we feel when we meet someone, I feel like I've known you my whole life.
It might be the only thing that Hollywood got right about relationships. That there's such a thing that you can meet someone and say, I feel like I've known you my entire life. And in that moment, when we achieve that with somebody else, we have to say, Emeshkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini. In that moment, we remember Churban HaBayis. Just like we're coming together, we have to recognize our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why when it comes to Avelus, when we leave an Avel's house, what do we say? Hamakyom Yenachem Eschem B'soch Shar Avlei Tzion V'Yerushalayim. You should be comforted amongst the mourners of Yerushalayim. What does that mean? It means that we are in a constant state of avelus. That's why there's a concept of tzipis l'Yoshua. We're hopeful. We're constantly yearning. Va'afal pishe yismameya im kol ze'achakalo. We're not waiting in the sense of we're just sitting around and waiting. That's not what the 6,000-year project has been about. It's not just we're sitting and waiting. So I'm sitting back. I got a good lazy boy. I have a nice house. I have a good car. I'm sitting and waiting for Mashiach to come. No, it's we're waiting with bated breath. Like you would wait for a friend that you haven't seen in so many years that you go to pick up at the airport and you're sitting in the car and you're just waiting for her to come out of the airport. You're not waiting, you're waiting. You're not sitting in the car and she just opens up the door and you go, hey, how's it going? Girls know this better than guys. You know how I know? The shrieks. That pitch destroys human ears. This is why I don't go to Yerushalayim the first 2 weeks after the seminaries have arrived. Because they haven't seen each other for 3 days, so they feel the need to shriek. And even though I'm making fun of it, there is something very beautiful about it. There's a palpable sense of excitement. Sorry, you had a question before?
Yeah, so if the whole thing that Gullus is the inability to see the Shekhinah, then how could we see it if we're in
Golos? Maybe your question is goof of the answer. Maybe the whole point of the fact that we've lost this vision is to work to regain it. Maybe the distance in the relationship creates the opportunity for closeness. Know what I mean? In other words, right now, there's the feeling of distance. But feelings are not necessarily the reality. That might be hard for some of you to hear. It's not, again, your reality is important and it should be validated and everybody should understand what you're experiencing. But there's also the reality. We feel distant. But as the Kotzke Rebbe once said, just because you feel distant from God doesn't mean it was Him that moved. He didn't move. We moved. You understand? Which questions haven't I answered yet? So now we come back to the story of Rabbi Akiva. You don't laugh at a funeral. You don't laugh at a funeral. I Tchias HaMesim. Tchias HaMesim is a long way off. You know what the difference is? For Rabbi Akiva, he wasn't at a funeral. When Rabbi Akiva saw the fox coming out of the Makam HaMikdash, and he saw the Beis HaMikdash in its ultimate state of destruction, everybody else saw, they saw this was a kvura. This is an unbelievable fulfillment of the prophecy of the destruction. How could we not cry? But Rav Akiva, who lived with the essence, Rav Akiva, who we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, the one who should have been Mekabel the Torah, it was Rav Akiva who knew how to teach Jews how to live in Galus. Why? Because he could laugh. He could laugh. Because whereas everybody else saw the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, he didn't see destruction at all. That was fulfilled. So now this one will be fulfilled. Meaning, right now it's not destroyed. It looks like on the outside it's destroyed and it's terrible. And Rav Akiva, they sold his flesh in the marketplace. They tore it off and they sold it. They were weighing his flesh in the marketplace. But Rav Akiva didn't live with that. It's not where Rav Akiva's head was at. He was connected to the essence, as we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. And so he could laugh. So I want to finish the year with the following vart. And for those of you that are raising your hands, I'll stay a couple minutes afterwards to answer your questions. We've spent a beautiful 10 months together. It was a privilege every time I came. I owe you much more than you owe me. Because without you, I couldn't be a Rebbe. You could have been Talmid Dot anywhere. You didn't have to choose to come to this year. You didn't have to choose to come to the seminary.
But I'm not a Rebbe until you walk into this shiurim. What's the overarching message that I've been trying to share with you this year? What's the one thing that we must take away? Is to live with hope. It's to be able to laugh in the face of tragedy. It's to be able to say, even though on the outside it mamish looks so bad, on the inside I'm so deeply connected. Overall, that's everything I've been trying to share with you. Why? Because when you live with the essence, when you live with your neshama, when you're living with the Ribbono Shel Olam, so you're able to negotiate anything in life because you can remain hopeful. There are those of you that will return to America and you will, hopefully some of you will make Aliyah. Hopefully those that don't make Aliyah will never treat this country like Disney World. Hopefully, those of you that don't make Aliyah will feel deeply connected to the Shleimus Haaretz, to the Yerushalayim. That no matter where you go, your heart, Mechaven Libo, Yerushalayim, we're always connected. Yerushalayim is not a place. A place can be destroyed. Yerushalayim is real, which means it's not physical. That's why Chazal say there's Yerushalayim Shalmail of Yerushalayim Shalmata. There's a real Yerushalayim. And that place is not subject to Churban. Yiratzim of Ne'avinu Shabashamayim. That we should all be Zoichet together to greet Mashiach Tzidkenu. That we should be Zoichet to Binyan Beis HaMikdash. That we should be Zoichet, as Chazal say, that ultimately in Olam Haba, the entire world will become Eretz Yisrael. All of Eretz Yisrael will be Yerushalayim. All of Yerushalayim will be Beis HaMikdash. All of Beis HaMikdash will be Kodesh HaKadoshim. Yiratzen that we should be zeicha to spend eternity in Yerushalayim.